Welcome to Kick Arts with Emma and Stephen, New Zealand's comprehensive art show brought to you on Planet FM 104.6 and streaming live around the globe thanks to our podcast, which you can download from planetaudio.org.nz. Each week we bring you a variety of interviews and music from across the arts world, from theatre to books, events to exhibitions. We've got it covered. Check out what's happening in your neighbourhood at kickarts.org.nz. Tonight we chat to the author of The Memory Thief, Leonie Agnew, and check in with production members from two shows coming up, Auckland Theatre Company's Things That Matters and Foolish Wit Company, The Crucible. That's a mouthful for me. Now, Emma, usually we kick off the show with an opening number, but we've been running a very special competition throughout July, and it's time to announce the winner of the $3,500 music video package from our friends at Arise.
It's pretty exciting.
Isn't it? That's the last time. We're playing that opening.
I know. Yeah, more do-do-do kick-ups.
Thanks, Richard. That's been an awesome opening for nearly 10 years. You've certainly done well with that, but it is time for a fresh sound, and we had some great entries, but isn't it appropriate that the winning one we've chosen kind of sort of fits some of the guests that we've had coming and going lately?
It sure does. So the are we announcing it now?
Yeah, go for it.
So the winner of our intro outro jingle competition sponsored by Arise is a person that's come into, well, he's been online a few times, hasn't he, on Zoom, and he's come in for an interview and came in recently at the start of the year and played live while he was here and had a bit of a impro jam. The night he was here, and he's produced a lot of people that have come in as well.
And his name's come up by a few acts about how he mentors people, which is really nice for someone so young and so talented to also give time back to our arts community, which, hey, that's what this thing's all about.
It sure is. So we're really excited to announce that the winner of our competition is Ant Tarrant. And Ant has given us an extraordinary year. The studio are clapping. We'll all clap. Woo! But we're going to play you the intro, and then, of course, you've got to listen till the end of the show to hear the outro, right?
Yeah, and I actually think the outro is my favourite, because then next week the intro makes even more sense once you've heard the outro.
Right.
Yeah.
Let's play the intro, though. Hey, this is Ant Tarrant with his with our new Kick Arts intro.
Everything, did you remember to sleep? What a surprise. Let's talk and let's laugh, cause I got so much to tell you. So let's go kick some art, art, art. Go kick some art, art, art. Go kick some art, art, art. Welcome to Kick Art.
Pretty cool. Thank you, Ant, and congratulations.
To go kick some art.
Art,
art, go kick some.
It's going to be in our heads now.
I know, but it's so funky and cool. Hey, I'm going to put a post up about the intros shortly on our Facebook page and maybe on our Insta story. Let us know what you think of it and make sure you listen for the outro later.
Yeah, the outro is pretty cool. Good end. Thank you. And I did check in to see if he was available to chat tonight on the phone, but he is actually busy filming, as we speak, another project. So he isn't available tonight. So congratulations, Ant. He's going to be listening to us tomorrow.
Oh, so
literally just before the show, I touched base to see if I could give him a call, but he wasn't available.
I won't Insta him then and say, guess what, you're
Now, we've got some fabulous-looking people in the studio tonight, Emma. Who have we got in front of us?
Oh, look, I think they're pretty proud that you called them fabulous. So, from Auckland Theatre Company's Things... Is it Thing That Matters or Things?
Things That Matter.
There's multiple things that matter.
Yes.
Lovely. Maybe. We've got Sian. And I didn't write down what character you're playing,
Sian. I'm playing the character of Dev.
Dev.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Mm-hmm. And then from Foolish Wit Theatre Company, we have previous guests who have returned. Last time they were representing Shoreside, and now they're here with Foolish Wit. We've got Gabby and Jonathan.
Hello.
Hello.
Welcome, welcome. Great to have you in the studio, and we're going to chat to Leonie on the phone a little later in the show. So let's kick it off by talking about what you've got coming up.
I get it, kick it off.
Oh, funny.
It's going to be one of those. So sunny, funny.
So, Sian, perhaps tell us first, things that matter. What, first of all, is this show all about for Auckland Theatre Company?
So, it's a kind of medical drama. It's based in Middlemore Hospital. And
is it like Shortland Strait?
Everyone says that. They do ask.
A bit more realistic drama, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, it is. I guess, like, it's based on, like, you know, the real, I guess, the decisions that doctors or medical practitioners have to make every day, and I guess the issues facing New Zealand in terms of the way that we kind of think about the medical industry and think about each other as a society. It just talks about kind of the whole medical system and I guess systemic issues with things in the medical side of what we do in this country.
So how is it portrayed on stage? How do you translate that? I mean, you know, is it because Shortland Street's instantly in our head, is it that we're going to watch this medical drama unfold?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's based on a memoir written by Dr. David Geller, who served in as an intensive care specialist at Middlemore for, I think it was 30 years. And so he kind of wrote this book about his life and family upbringing as well as his experience in the hospital. So the play kind of goes in between that. So it kind of tells a bit about him or about his family life, and then kind of jumps into the hospital, and then you kind of see, you know, things that the intensive care units are faced with and the decisions that are made. You know, there's decisions being made really quick all the time, and it's really stressful, but it's, you know, sometimes there's so many patients coming in and out of that unit, and it's hard sometimes to make these difficult decisions. But it is, you know, on the book, it's matters of life and death, and that's what it really is.
How recent was the memoirs? So, I mean, are we up to COVID times, or was it before that?
It was before COVID. I think it was around 2017 that the book came out. I mean, it's still modern day.
It would have been fascinating to get his take on how the hospital's prepared for that.
Yeah, for sure. It doesn't really cover the COVID side of things, but, I mean, you know, just getting to see how intense those situations can be, I couldn't imagine the pressure that would have been added with COVID. You know, you kind of hear about it, and we did hear about it in the news and all that, but it's hard to imagine actually having been in the front line if you were in that position, how much added stress that would have added to it.
And who adapted it for stage?
Gary Henderson.
Okay.
So, yeah, he adapted the play, and so he would have had lots of chats to Dr. David Geller about, you know, the book and his experience. And, yeah, he's done, like, I think, really good job of condensing kind of a lot of things that are mentioned in the book into this, I guess, bite-sized play. So, yeah.
Who do you think it's going to appeal to most?
It's kind of hard to say. I feel like it would appeal to, I guess, anyone, really. I mean, you know, you get to see, because I think as society sometimes it's hard to know what doctors and nurses do inside hospitals. And, you know, like, if you come in with family, it's like, oh, please just save my loved one or help this person. And, you know, they're doing their best, and sometimes there's a lot of circumstances that are out of their control. So I think anyone would benefit from seeing this to know what it's like on the other side, to actually be the one facing those patients and, again, having to face those difficult decisions. So, yeah, I think it would appeal to, like, a wide audience.
Yeah. I can imagine it would, Emma. I can see this having a really wide appeal, especially given our recent interest in the medical side of things.
And I think, you know, thinking of Gary Henderson's other plays, like The Unseasonable Fall of Snow and that, which, you know, mental health issues and that, he's really good at writing in a way that tackles issues, but still leaves the place as an audience to feel like they're at a piece of theatre.
And it has that, like, you know, the issues that are raised, I feel like they're real eye-openers. I mean, even just being in the rehearsal room, I'm like, man, yeah, like, I've got to check myself in terms of how I see certain things in society and I guess hospitals and doctors. So it's got that, but yeah, it does have the theatrics of still being a show. Yeah, I feel like it's real grounded in reality, but also got the theatrics there.
So if you had to, this is a tricky question, mm-hmm. I don't know, it might not be a tricky question. If you had to put a theatre form around this, here's Gabby's nodding her head as a fellow drama teacher mm-hmm, in the room. Mm-hmm. What do you think this would come under? Is it documentary theatre? Is it, you know, because it's not verbatim because it's not from direct words, but it's from a memoir. Mm. So, or is it just New Zealand theatre? Not that New Zealand's just a just, but you know what I mean.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think, like, it is New Zealand theatre, but I mean, again, I feel like it, you know, it could say a lot of things about the medical industry worldwide. You know, again, like, I guess how issues are addressed. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, it could verge on documentary a little bit, you know, because it is based on fact. Like, it's based on Dr. David's, you know, actual account having worked in the hospital. So, yeah, I'm not sure if that fully answers your question.
No, it does. And I think that's a tricky thing with New Zealand theatre. Gabby, would you agree?
Yeah, it's kind of a bit of everything. And,
you know, New Zealand theatre's got so many little components in it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all important, but it's also, you know, those little compartments. Is it New Zealand feminist theatre, or is it New Zealand marae theatre, or is it New Zealand Pacifica theatre, or, you know.
And for yourself and your character, what research have you done? Did you head out to Middlemore or read the memoirs?
Yeah, well, I'm very lucky because I have a few close friends who actually, you know, work in or have done the same job that my character's done. Right. So, yeah, my character's a resident doctor at the hospital. So, you know, he's gone through uni and then is in this. It's somewhat of an apprenticeship, but he's a registrar, so would have done like anywhere between 5 and 7 years in the hospital. And
it kind of seems crazy to say apprenticeship at 5 to 7 years.
Well, yeah,
it is.
You know, I think so you go to med school, you're there for like 7 years in total, including a placement, and then you go through this apprenticeship. Mm. And yeah, it's like you're learning to deal with patients. You're learning, I guess, your skill, and then, I mean, they're still studying for exams, so there's a lot of pressure there. So, I mean, I was lucky because I had these friends that I have been able to sit down with and be like, oh, I'll take you for a drink, and then just literally pick their brains and be like, so what's it like? What do you do on a day-to-day basis, and how do you feel about this, and how do you feel about that, and oh, what's this?
And so you weren't tempted to follow them in a white coat one day and just wander the corridors?
Yeah, one of my friends said, oh, I might be able to sneak you in if you want to try, but she was like, oh, you know, might not be the best look. I was like, no, I don't want to get you in trouble.
Or you might see something that will certainly keep you in acting.
But, you know, it was quite nice for them for me to take, like, so much, not that I haven't in the past, but I took, like, so much interest in what they were doing. And I think, you know, they kind of enjoyed downloading on what they loved about their job and what they didn't like, and I guess, yeah, the difficulties that they face, but like why they do it, and you know, all those sorts of questions. I just could have someone firsthand that I could ask. And we were lucky enough to we got a little private tour with Dr. David Geller through Middlemore Hospital.
Oh,
so
cool.
Got to meet him and ask him some questions, and then he showed us a lot of these different areas, and that was awesome too, because you know, that's a different side of the hospital that most of the public don't get to see unless you have an experience in there. So, yeah, that was real eye-opening as well.
Brilliant. Mm. As your character, what do you imagine your character would want people to take away from the show?
I think... that's a good question. I think it would be, you know, again, for just the public to... be aware that these doctors are human. Like, they're people that, again, are faced with these really difficult decisions that it's not black and white.
Yeah.
It's not black and white. And all these pressures that are on them, like these junior doctors in particular, like I said, you know, they're having to... they're being introduced to these decisions. Do we let this person live or do we let them die? Or you know, what's... trying to figure out what's happening with someone. as well as the pressures of having to impress their seniors, because, you know, they have to pass these exams, but they also, like, it's a, I guess, a personality sort of test as well in terms of how much can this person cope with. So that I feel, you know, I feel for them. There's immense pressure on these, junior doctors as well as senior doctors. But yeah, I think it would just be, people will just be able to see, I guess, yeah, how difficult it is for them, and hopefully have more of an appreciation for the work that they do, and see the person, not just, oh, this doctor who's, you know, the journey that they've had to go through to get to where they are. It's pretty intense.
Yeah.
I think it's really interesting, even when you look at what medical students have to do to be able to get into medicine. I've been an actor on the side where, when they're getting interviewed for getting into med school, they kind of almost have to audition with role plays where they get actors in to play difficult patients and see how they will cope with talking, you know, in the scenarios that I've been given as an actor before.
Yeah.
Some of the things I've had to do to these poor students, you know, and it's like the kids with the nurses.
We do it with the nurses. We provide drama students for nurses' exams, and they've got to cope with real patients and real kids.
Yeah. It's a lot, you know, and I think people maybe sometimes take it for granted how much medical students have to go through to get to the positions that they end up being in.
Yeah, but then it's that hard twist too when you're there at midnight with an elderly family member who's waiting now 6 hours for a doctor, and the first person you finally see is that doctor. Of course, the first thing you say is, where have you been? We've been waiting. When you're in that moment, you often don't appreciate it till you exit and you've had the care.
But, I mean, that's kind of where, I guess Dr. David Geller was coming from. There's more information in the play and in the book, but, you know, he goes back further to saying, you know, what if we address the situation much earlier, before patients come into the hospital? So what are we doing in society, and what are we doing today to help people make better decisions so that these things don't happen? Obviously, accidents are going to happen and people can come in, but some people are being rushed into ICU with, you know, conditions that could have been treated a lot earlier through their environment, you know? And it's not always people's fault, you know? And again, I like, if audiences get to see that, I think they'll get to, you know, you get a slightly different view and think, yeah, maybe there is more we can be doing. Because then maybe the hospitals wouldn't be so overrun. Because that's what's happening, is they're being bombarded and there's not enough staff and they're working long hours. It's under-resourced, you know. And as it is, I don't know if the hospitals get enough resource, and where the money's being spent is, like, again, if they address it earlier, then it wouldn't be falling in the hands of these medical professionals. I mean, obviously you can't catch everything, but is there more that we could be doing?
Well, I don't know about you, Emma, but he's sold me tickets. ATC.co.nz is where you'll find all the information. But absolutely brilliant. We'll chat more about you as a performer and your journey throughout the show. But let's move across to The Crucible, which is opening very shortly, if I am right.
That's right, yeah.
On the 11th.
The 11th, yeah. It's August.
10 days away.
It is. 10
and
days
counting.
So if anybody's lived their life under a stone, tell us, what's The Crucible all about?
It was written by Arthur Miller in the 50s. It uses the Salem witch trials of the late 1600s as an allegorical warning for sort of hysterical accusation and rumour mongering. So it was written in the 50s, and it was a response to Arthur Miller being accused of being a communist. So it was sort of...
The McCarthy trials?
Yeah, the McCarthy trials, that's right, yeah. But it's the message is still really relevant, and I think that's what we're trying to push on. I think that's why it sort of remains a core text, because those issues are still, you know, still really relevant, and obviously... You know, it happened in the 1600s and it's still happening now, so...
And tell us about your roles. Who do you both play?
I am John Proctor.
And I am Elizabeth Proctor.
And who are they?
So, I'm John's wife. But John is a farmer and he... I don't know, he's a bit of a polarising figure, but he's the protagonist of the play. And he's a bit of a, polarizing figure, kind of goes against a lot. It's a very religious society, kind of goes against a lot of what's happening with the church and,
He was also an outsider, wasn't he? Yeah. He'd kind of come into the fold as an outsider and always seen kind of as a bit of a troublemaker because he wasn't one of the family that had grown up through that.
Yeah.
Yeah, he lived slightly out of town. He was about 5 miles out of town. And, yeah, he says 5 miles specifically a lot in the play. and, yeah, he was an outsider. I think he just kind of wanted to farm and get on with his life. And because it was such a religious society, he had to do what was expected of him. And I think that grated in the wrong way quite a bit.
Mm. Yeah, and Paris, who is the reverend of the town, just, yeah, they do not see eye to eye at all.
No.
So, yeah, I think there's a lot of that. And,
And I mean, like you saying about it being relevant too, I mean, that whole mass hysteria kind of thing is so prevalent these days, especially with, like, social media and everything and how quickly people can be keyboard warriors.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely, and it doesn't take any evidence at all for people to jump on a bandwagon.
Yeah, that cancel culture and, reading into vaccinations or, like, you know, COVID hoaxes and all that sort of thing. So, yeah.
Yeah, there's, I mean, it's not hunting down communists anymore, but it's, I think it's a lot more varied now, that mass hysteria, all the rumour mongering. And, yeah, you're right, social media has made it a lot easier to, I guess, be sucked in by that because of the kind of bubbles we create with the algorithms from Facebook or Instagram or whatever.
Sorry?
No, I was just, can't even remember what I was going to say.
I was going to say Foolish Wit Company. Tell us about who they are.
Yes. They are, they're a company that we got involved with through Shoreside Theatre, which we've been working with up in Takapuna. And I guess we just sort of make connections because you make connections in the theatre company.
Yeah, so the director of... We were in Hamlet earlier in the year, and so the director of that, James Bell, has this other theatre company that he runs with a couple other people, and they really like to kind of take classics or contemporary plays and give them an opportunity to be shown.
And where's this one taking place?
So this is happening at the Pump House. So inside.
Yeah, because last time we interviewed you, you were out doing something outside, weren't you?
Yeah,
if I remember rightly. Yep,
yeah. So, yeah, at the Pump House, but the outside area. But this time we're inside.
The luxury of indoors.
Yeah, no chance of being rained on this time.
So it's at the Pump House. And it's so such a great space.
With a classic tale like this, how do you think you hook today's audience in? You know, they've got opportunities to go to something like Things That Matter, which is obviously as new as we can get.
Mm.
How do we get them to still come back and see the classics?
We're not modernizing the text, but it's a timeless play, and so we're sort of capitalizing on that idea through the set and the costume, and I guess the way we interact on stage. Yeah, so we're not trying to modernise it in any way. It's not reset into a mall or something, but it's, we're trying to get those timeless ideas across because, like, you know, that that allegory still stands from the 50s to today. So it's a timeless allegory, so it's a timeless story.
And I think it's really nice as well to have that opportunity to see, you know, the words of somebody like Arthur Miller, who is, you know, one of the classic playwrights, just to have that opportunity to see that.
What about the fact, though, that because even though it was written by Miller in the 50s, because it was based when it was, it's kind of, it's not Shakespearean, obviously, but there is definitely an old English side to it, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, there is, I think, for, I mean, I know I studied it with my high school kids, and for some of them it did take a little bit to get around to, you know, those sayings and things like that as well, isn't it?
Yeah, and that language and, I suppose, the place of woman and all of that sort of stuff. Yeah, definitely. Mm. Yeah, I think
there's definitely language that is tricky. When I first read it, which I had not actually read it since I was a teenager, I couldn't remember anything about it. And then I read it again in preparation for this, and it took me a while to get into that language. So yeah, it is a little bit difficult on the page, but once you see it up on stage and see people interacting and how they place emphasis on the words. And I mean, it's like any drama script. Once you
it's like Shakespeare, isn't it?
Yeah,
once
exactly,
you physicalize it actually becomes a physical thing.
It's much clearer, and it's the whole play is really about the relationships between all of those people. And once you see that in a physical space, it just pops so much more.
So pros and cons of playing a husband and wife on stage?
It is weird. There's a scene at the end where I don't know, it's very serious. John's about to go and get hung, or hanged, and I just can't stop laughing. So
that doesn't bode well, mate.
Yeah, no. It's like, I don't know what that says about our relationship, but it's interesting, I think, because Elizabeth and John, as well, their relationship is so different from our relationship as a married couple. It's a lot of imagination and being like, okay, what would it be like?
But it must have some real pros as well, like rehearsing.
I was just
going to
say, learning lines.
But learning lines must be.
Being comfortable with touching each other, that's nice. Mm.
Yeah, there is lots of that. We didn't have to do any intimacy training or stuff like that, but it means our lines are down, but it's still the trying to be serious and trying to look each other in the eyes without laughing, which is much more difficult to do when you know the person so well. If it's a stranger on the stage opposite you, it's much easier to be serious.
What do you think, Sean? Is it easier do you have intimate moments? Does your character have intimate moments in things to that matter?
He doesn't, unfortunately. He's probably too busy for that. I actually haven't. I haven't had that where I've been playing across with someone where I've had to be intimate and I'm in a relationship with them. So I imagine that does. Yeah, I mean, I think it's easy, and it probably is, but then, yeah, I can imagine trying to be serious, and you're like, we've got to do this, we've got to do this, and then you're just cracking up all the time, because you guys would have such a good time together anyway.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
So all the in-jokes that's coming through, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But that could be fun too. Can I make them laugh?
Yeah, there are definite moments, it's like, yeah, this is awesome, but, oh my gosh.
At the same time, and you wouldn't have to, you wouldn't have to try and create that chemistry or that intimacy. Like, it would just be so natural, and people who don't know you would come and see the show and be like, man, chemistry between those two. Amazing.
I hope so.
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah.
The thing is, the relationship is you know, rocky throughout the play, so.
Yeah.
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 Channel those arguments.
Right. If you'd like to give couples counselling, give us a call. All right, we're going to take a short music break now, and then we're going to chat with the wonderful author, Leonie Agnew, and then we'll catch up with these guys a little bit more about their own acting journeys and classroom journeys too. Now, La Coco is back unveiling her newest single, a romantically ethereal, heartbreaking ode to the space left behind after somebody has gone. La Coco is a prominent Samoan Māori artist from Mangere, South Auckland, renowned for her thick soul sound and musicianship. She has been nominated for a Pacific Music Award and won Best R&B Album for her work on Grateful at the Waiata Māori Music Awards in 2021. Her upcoming EP, Too Far Gone, is due for release later in the year. We are so delighted to be playing it here on Planet FM. Here it is, Gone.
But generally, as you smile and say, and whisper generally, now you're gone into
Wonderful La Coco with Gone, part of her album coming out soon, Too Far Gone. Nice sound. Thanks for sharing that with us to play tonight on Kick Arts.
It was a nice one.
Now, we're very lucky to have Leonie Agnew, author of The Memory Thief, on the line now. Welcome to the show, Leonie.
Oh, thanks very much. I appreciate you guys having me.
Oh, great to have you on a Sunday night. Hope you've had a great weekend.
I did. I had my launch yesterday, so I've had a really good weekend.
Yay, awesome. So tell our listeners all about The Memory Thief.
Basically, it's a story for sort of 9 to 12-year-olds about a boy called Seth who's actually a troll. It's set in the Dunedin Gardens in New Zealand, and basically he's he has the ability to turn to stone, which obviously is what trolls can do, but that means he can pass as a statue in the gardens during the day. And at night when the sun goes down, he comes to life. He's trapped in the gardens because of the iron fences, because when I researched trolls, in terms of the mythology, I discovered they were allergic to iron, which I did not know. And the Dunedin Gardens have an iron fence that goes around them, so that I could build up the story that he was trapped inside the gardens. And he couldn't remember how he got there, or he didn't know how to escape either. And basically, I then changed the mythology a little to say, see, originally it said that they were man-eaters, and I thought, right, I don't want to do Twilight for twins. It's been done. So I decided that I would change it slightly so that instead of physically eating someone, he takes their memories because he can't retain his own memories. He can maybe for a day or a month, but at some stage they all go. And so that's what he needs to survive. He doesn't need food or anything like that. So basically, it's quite a lonely existence. And then what happens, of course, is eventually in his loneliness, he's just a boy of about 12, he meets a girl who lives next to the fence. On the fence line, she's staying with her grandfather, who was the head gardener. And when they meet, she gradually figures out what he is, because she's very smart, and they do a deal. And the deal is that he will take her bad memories if she keeps a secret. And from that point, things go very, very wrong. So that's the basic idea.
That's really cool.
It's very cool being a Dunedin person and growing up in those botanic gardens and knowing them so well.
Oh, really? Yeah, so I was doing the Dunedin residency a few years ago now and at the university, and I was living very close to there. So I would spend a lot of time just walking and ending up in the gardens. And they had such a strong sense of atmosphere. You know, as you will know, they were the oldest botanical gardens in the country, and the design is quite remarkable. It's a real, as you know, it's a real forest feel to certain parts of it. I used to sit there and think, "There's a story here," and I would take my notepad and sit there and sort of wait, waiting. And it took a long time, but eventually I got an idea.
And I think for me, my memory was because they used to shut the gates at midnight, and there was more than one occasion that we made it in the back gate coming home from Friday night out on the town, and the gates would be shut by the time you got to the other end. So you'd kind of be trapped
in. The gates?
Yes, we did have a number of times climbing those gates, and as you probably recall, they've got quite sharp spikes on the top of those metal gates.
Did you see any trolls, Emma?
No, I never saw any trolls, but it was definitely quite fun climbing over those metal gates.
Well, maybe you just can't remember meeting them because they took your memory.
Maybe they did. There you go. Nice.
And you've got beautiful illustrations by Karen, is it Riley Hart? Is that how we say the
same? I think it's Reinhardt, I think. Oh, I haven't met them, but I believe that's his name.
Cool. Well, who do you think, what sort of age is this book appealing to?
Look, it's definitely like 9 to 12. And I think it's particularly hitting the sweet spot of probably 10 to 11. That's been the feedback so far anyway, because we've had some early readers. And I'm also a primary school teacher, so I kind of get a feel for the different sort of audiences, different age groups for books. That's what I would say.
Cool. Well, we have given it to our student author, who I think is about 11, Henry, and he's coming on in 2 weeks' time. So you'll have to listen to the show in 2 weeks because you're going to get a live review from Henry, who is an avid book reader in West Auckland. Now, tell us about your journey as an author.
From the beginning?
Yeah.
Obviously as a kid, I used to love writing stories. It's often the way. I wasn't always the best, but it was just something that I did for fun in my own time. And in my 20s, I actually got a job working as a writer in advertising. You know, they're called a copywriter. So I'd write ads, TV ads, radio ads, print ads. But it wasn't until I was about 30 that I just decided what I really wanted was to write children's books. And funnily enough, it came from having studied popular fiction at university with Claudia Marquis. And we actually studied Harry Potter. And at the time, I think the fourth book had just come out. So it wasn't quite what it is now, but it was certainly very big. And that's why we were studying it. And I just like to say I did not think, okay, I'm going to write the next Harry Potter at all. But I did think, gosh, I've been trying to write things and I haven't thought of writing for children. And until that point, over the years, I would start things and not finish them. And when I would come back to them, I would look at them and think, this isn't right, it's not that good. But this was a big change. So I wrote something which was absolute rubbish. But when I went back to it after 6 weeks to look at it, I knew there was something there. So from that point, I had a feeling that this was the area I wanted to write in. That children's books had some sort of appeal, which is hard to explain. But I think when you find your genre, you don't probably have to explain it. It's just what speaks to you and what works. So as I was saying, it was what worked for me. And I knew straight away that this was better than anything I'd tried. So then spent 10 years trying to get better. And when I became a primary school teacher, I had my first book published after lots of rewriting. So there you go.
That's cool. And are you busy penning the next one, or is it already at the publishers?
I have just finished a story. It will be sent off to publishers very shortly. And it's about children in a rural town who decide, maybe I shouldn't say. No, they decide to fake UFO sightings to bring tourism into their town.
Well, that's very cunning of them, isn't it? Yeah. Very cunning. Maybe that's what they need over at the Olympics.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun with it. My stories are all quite different, and I've had that feedback as well. So it's a slightly different tone to The Memory Thief. It's slightly younger and just a lot more humorous, probably. Fantastic. We'll see. We'll see what happens.
Now, as a primary school teacher, are we getting kids to still read enough?
No. I don't think so. I think there's a real issue with a lack of funding for libraries.
Yeah.
And people just continually seem to be denying the importance of that. You know, we look at these figures we hear about the literacy rate falling for children in New Zealand, and it seems like such an obvious place to begin. Every school should have a functioning library that is open every lunchtime. Preferably every morning tea time.
Yeah.
And there should be a librarian there who knows the books.
Yeah.
I mean, this is nothing against schools that can't afford it. The issue is the funding. And that's the best person to help both support the teachers and themselves hand the best books over to that child. But the teachers themselves, you know, we're so busy these days, we have to be so many things to the children and be specialists in every area. And the truth is a lot of us don't have the time to be specialists. So for me, I read a great deal, so that part of it is easy for me. But I don't expect everybody else to know what I know and be able to sort of recommend books for every child.
Yeah.
So, yeah, again, it comes down to funding.
Yeah, I mean, there's this move to digital, but there's something special still about picking up that book and taking it home and not having a glaring screen in your kid's bedroom.
Well, it's interesting you should say that, because I still remember when, you know, I'm sure you do too, when e-books were about to become the new big thing and all the publishers were taking a very big breath. It's just as they came in on the scene. But what they found was that children's, we're talking about not the teens, but your 12 and unders, still prefer the physical book. So, for example, at the school where I work, say, we do have e-books and we have books online, and both at my school and other schools where I've spoken to librarians, all the kids want books, the physical thing in their hand. It's something to do with the experience of reading, I guess. I don't think it needs to be analysed. It's just a fact. So until the children themselves, you know, of their age group, start saying, we'd much rather read this on a screen, then I think we just need to listen to what they want and give them physical copies.
I think as an adult, I much prefer to have a book in my hand. I hate reading books off the screen.
And also all the other messages that pop up.
I'm open to it. I'm open to it if that's what the kids wanted. And there are a few. There are a few, especially kids sometimes with dyslexia, and they can change the font and the colours of the background. And you do find going into the high school years, there's a bit of a shift. But still, it's continuously, they'd say to us, we'd rather have a book. Where's the book? So,
if people want to get to follow you or find out more about you, can they follow you on social media?
Actually, no, they can't.
They've got to write a letter to Dunedin, to the trolls, who will deliver it there.
Yeah, sure. That sounds like a good idea. No, so, I mean, social media, actually, it's an interesting one, because the children that I write for are not on social media. So if I was writing for teenagers or older, it would be really important that I was definitely in that market. But my website has gone down and it's about to come back up. So at the very least, shortly, people can find an email address if they want to contact me.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Well, we wish you every success with The Memory Thief, and you'll have to tune into our show in a couple of weeks' time and have a listen to Henry's review.
Yeah, I will do. And thanks very much for asking me. It's nice talking to you.
Absolute pleasure. Make sure you get out and get that book for your young child, available where all good books are sold. Thanks, Leonie. Have a great rest of your evening.
Great. Thanks very much. Bye.
Are we avid readers in the studio?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, what do you like to read?
Everything.
Everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really like junky chick lit, but, you know, on biographies, they're good.
Junky what?
Chick lit. You know, terrible, like, yeah, chick lit.
Okay.
You know, romantic comedies, that sort of thing, yeah.
Right,
yeah,
I thought it was a new
Easy listening. Yeah, easy listening. Well, like easy listening music, isn't it? Easy reading.
It's trash.
Yeah, trash, yeah. But when you're a really busy person, I actually think having easy reading trash is a perfect way to actually stop that brain stuff happening, right? Because it's like me going home at night and watching Shortland Strat. It's my way to unclutter and actually go, I don't have to think. I can just watch and be entertained, or I can just read, you know, and it's a great way to go to sleep.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, I do the reality TV. Sean, what do you do? Do you read? How do you relax?
I wish I did read more, but I like to watch TV or films, you know, just absorb content that way. But, yeah, I mean, I read scripts and stuff for plays, but yeah, I wish I did read a bit more. I do miss reading books, just don't make enough time for it.
That's a really good question too. So you say you read a lot, or you read anything?
Yeah.
How many plays do you read out of interest, or are you more, you like reading a book?
I like reading a book. I have read plays for interest, but it's mostly classic plays. No, I don't really. This is something that I'm very new to, plays. So I've only just sort of started figuring out what they are and being able to read them, I suppose.
Mm. There's definitely an art in reading plays, though, right, Gibby?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think it helps to read them out loud, do all the voices.
Yeah.
More fun.
Far more. So, Gabby, you're a drama teacher.
Yes.
Yep. Are you bringing your students along to see The Crucible?
They are interested in coming. I think because I walked into the class after I got the role, and I was like, oh, my gosh, I got a role. I got a big role. And they're like, okay, miss, calm down. Yeah, so I think a few of them are going to come. Which is really nice.
But, and what's been your theatrical journey up to this point?
So I decided that, like, a couple of years ago that I needed to get back into doing some theatre. I did theatre at high school. As a subject, it was only available for sixth form. So that was, I think, quite difficult I really wanted to act, but the opportunity wasn't really there for school. And then really my confidence just, I was too afraid to go out and go to community theatres and do anything. And then maybe in my mid-20s, I went along with a friend and was chorus in a couple of Selwyn community theatre productions with June Renwick.
Who just won a big $10,000 yes, ASB Hero Award.
Oh, she is cool. A star. It was that time and the confidence. And then I, again, followed somebody else to Papakura Theatre Company and did Blackadder there, and that was wonderful and I really liked it. And then it just came to that point where I was like, I keep telling my kids that they need to step out of their comfort zone and go and do stuff. I need to be doing that. I need to be leading that. So, yeah, it's taken a while and a lot of kind of confidence, you know, building, but yeah, I'm really happy, and I think the groups that I'm working with now, and this is the great thing about community theatre, there are these amazing, passionate people. The people that I've found and the groups have just been wonderful, and I've kind of found my place.
And that's
really
important.
Nice.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Cool. Jonathan, your journey?
So I'm fairly new to the stage. It was a couple of years ago, Gabby said she was going to go and audition for Macbeth, which was being put on by Shoreside. So I thought that I would go along as well, because I figured I'd probably just get a minor role or two, and then we'd be able to hang out together and have this as kind of a shared hobby. And I got, you know, a few small roles in Macbeth, and then I was sort of hooked from that moment on. And I now waited for the next Shakespeare in the Park, which was Hamlet. And I got given Claudius as a role, which was massive, for my second ever time on the stage. And, so I, you know, loved it even more. And then now I'm John Proctor, which is
one of the biggest roles there is.
But also, you know, for someone who hasn't had a lot of time in theatre, to go straight into these massive historical pieces of drama rather than
it's a little bit
light, oozy comedy.
Yeah, there was some jealousy there from me.
Sorry about it.
That's so cool. And where would you like to take it?
I don't really know. At the moment, I just am enjoying doing it. I don't really have an end goal. It's just something that I enjoy doing on the side. It certainly takes up a lot of time. I'm loving it. I just want to see what happens next, what is coming on next, you know.
That's cool.
Go for it.
And remind us what you do for a day job.
I am an English teacher.
Ah, brilliant.
In my high school.
And do you think that's maybe why your, love of or like for histories, because they're quite often English texts?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
So the literary genius in them?
Mm. Well, the reason I wanted to audition for Macbeth was because that was my favourite Shakespeare, and I taught it, I teach it. It's just my favourite play. It's just so bloody and great. So that was what prompted me to audition in the first place, just being familiar with it already. And I think that helps, sort of knowing the texts a little bit before you are in them.
So when you're studying them with your students, are they up out of their chairs and doing it?
I would like that to happen sometimes. I certainly promote it and try and get a little bit of theatrics in the classroom, but they're not often as on board as I would like.
So does that mean you're a bit like Mr. G and you jump on the table and take on all the roles?
No.
Well, it's time you start. Yeah.
I'll do my best, yeah.
And Sian, tell us about your journey into theatre that's led up to this role with Auckland Theatre Company.
Well, I was born for it. No. No, I started when I was about 12. I kind of took youth drama classes at the Auckland Performing Arts Centre. And through that got to do, like, end-of-year shows for a few years there growing up. And in those classes you do lots of theatre sports and, drama, basically. So it was always kind of an outside-of-school activity. But I knew it was something I kind of wanted to do. But then I did it up to, like, university. And when I left school, I didn't really think that I could do it as a career or a full-time venture, so went off and pursued some other careers for a little while, and then just got to the point where I wasn't really feeling fulfilled, and I was thinking, what can I do? And acting had always been something I was passionate about, so yeah, a few years ago I thought I'll throw it in and try and commit to this full-time, and I've been working like odd jobs here and there and just tried to pursue that, and got back into the industry, reconnected with some people, and doing classes, workshops, all that sort of thing. And I think it's just been, I guess, a combination of like my effort as well as time and opportunity coming, it just, I guess, lined up. And I feel very fortunate to be in the position that I'm in. Very lucky. So
brilliant. Yeah. What's next on the horizon for you?
There's nothing set in stone just yet, so it's been a pretty good year for me so far. Did a few little screen jobs at the beginning of the year, and then did another theatre show before this and then this. So, I mean, if that's all I do creatively for the rest of this year, then that's fine. But I do want to get into some writing myself, so that's something I can do on my own. But yeah, in terms of any gigs coming my way, I guess it's just, we'll just see what happens.
Yeah, that's cool. Cool. All right, we're going to take a short music break, and after the break we've got some competitions for you, our bulletins, and then we're going to ask our guests, since the topic is things that matter, we're going to ask questions that matter. Be warned. Now, music-wise, a little bit different now. We've got the song Somewhere from West Side Story, sung by Lucy Thomas. Now, at just 16 years old, Lucy Thomas from Wigan is already creating a huge impression with her incredibly pure and powerful voice. She captivated audiences with her sensational performances on The Voice Kids. And after her appearance on the show, Lucy was immediately offered a recording contract by Cavendish Records, resulting in her album premiere. And this is the song from West Side Story, Somewhere. that for a sound at just 16?
Well, yesterday I was at the NSPA Theatre Awards all day.
Yep.
So that's the Northern School of Performing Arts Theatre Awards that Sophia had talked to us about a few weeks ago. And I have to say, the talent there, there were 5 to 21-year-olds. Oh, my goodness. Like, you hear that. And there are some kids in Auckland that have got that talent. And I was blown away yesterday. So well done, Sophia, at Northern School,
for
putting
on
another music theatre competition. And to all the singing teachers around Auckland that sent their students along, good on you.
Yeah, brilliant. Hey, speaking of competitions, so Ant Tarrant obviously won tonight's big competition. We had a message come through. The AJ Sound, who was with us just a week or so ago, is supporting Ant at Move Space, a special event on Saturday the 21st of August at 8 p.m. Tickets are available through Eventbrite.
Fantastic.
Now, we've got some giveaways too tonight.
We have. The wonderful people in the room with us have actually both got their theatre companies, have given us double passes to give away. So, if you would like to win a double pass, you're going to, it's not up yet, but it will be up by the end of the night, because you know I'm sitting here doing social media. So, there will be the opportunity. You just need to make sure that you are following Kick Arts on either Instagram or Facebook. And we will be checking that you are there. And then just tag who you would take along. And you're going to, there'll be two separate competitions, one for the Crucible, one for Things That Matter. And we will draw those later in the week.
Yeah, brilliant. So get online to our Facebook page. Don't forget to check out our website. It's got everything coming up in the theatre, arts and music scene at kickarts.org.nz. And we can list things for you and tell you how we can give you some extra media exposure. Just send us an email at info@kickarts.org.nz.
And both of our shows that are on tonight, that are here, Things That Matter and The Crucible, are both on our events listing, so you can find out where to buy tickets and things via our website as well as theirs. So
and we had a few things come through our inbox this week.
We did. So after a hugely successful season in 2019, Massive Company return with Half of the Sky, a heartwarming and tender tale of three sisters and a whānau dynamic. Performed by an impressive cast, the show was written by BAFTA award-winning actor and playwright Lenny James, best known for his work on TV show Fear the Walking Dead, Save Me and Save Me Too. This poignant production will play at Q Theatre's Loft from the 7th to the 11th of September and in Whangarei's 116 from the 15th to the 18th of September as part of Massive Company's 30th year of celebrations.
Awesome. Sounds great. And a festival like no other, Te Tai Rāwhiti's Arts Festival, will bring together over 200 artists and performers for the third annual celebration of the arts and the talented East Coast from the 8th to the 17th of October. There is far too much on to fit into a short bulletin, but it covers everything from music to dance, theatre to film, workshops, tamariki offerings, including a series of storytelling and book readings. Visit www.teetairāwhitiartsfestival.nz or hunt out a free festival program at cafes and venues across the East Coast.
And announcing the inaugural Write Fest, a craft-focused writing event for established and aspiring writers. 2011 will be the first outing of this new initiative, which offers writers of all experience levels a chance to hear from writing professionals on a range of topics, coming to Ponsonby since St. Columba Centre on the 14th of August. Wondering how to write intimate scenes or aching to start a memoir that you've been talking about forever. Maybe you want to find out about self-publishing, or maybe smashing procrastination is at the top of your list. Well, Write Fest 2011 has something for you. Jam-packed one-day event with a range of workshops with a stellar lineup, which include children's and lifestyle authors Janice Marriott, Bram Stoker award-winning Lee Murray, novelist Kristen McKenzie, and winner of the 2018 Michael Giffnins Prize, Ruby Porter. It's designed so participants can choose their own adventure. The program offers a range of workshops, and you can register for what appeals to you. So check out Eventbrite for all the information about Write Fest.
Now, Auckland Theatre Company, once they have packed up the bag of things that matters, they are launching their production of The Haka Party Incident, described as an innovative, brilliant piece of theatre that all New Zealanders need to see. It's going to tour venues and festivals across the country in October and November. Winner of Play Market's Best Play by a Māori Playwright and the inaugural Dean Parker Adaption for Non-Fiction Award earlier this year, judges said the play was powerful political theatre which rips the band-aid off racism in Aotearoa. The Haka Party Incident, written and directed by renowned filmmaker and theatre director Katie Wolfe, will return to Tamaki Makaurau in an unprecedented popular demand following its sold-out premiere season earlier this year. The play will then head down the country, stopping at five major arts festivals, including the Te Tairawhiti Arts Festival, Taranaki Arts Festival, Tauranga Arts Festival, and the Hawke's Bay Arts Festival, and Nelson Arts Festival. I really just should have named those places, shouldn't I? Never mind. The Haka Party Incident retells the events of May 1st, 1979, when activist group He Tāro visited a group of University of Auckland engineering students as they rehearsed an annual mock haka that was a long-held tradition of the department. A confrontation erupted and the university haka party was never performed again. The incident resulted in a reset of race relations in New Zealand. Now, it opens in Auckland on the 2nd of October and tours nationwide in partnership with tour makers until the 4th of November. Dates, times, venue and ticketing information are available at atc.co.nz. Now, Emma, we started our show a little different tonight, so we didn't do our usual check-in, and you and I went and caught up with the complete works of Shakespeare Abridged at MPA Theatre just a couple of nights ago.
We did. That was Friday night. We were there for opening night, and the opening night audience were definitely loving it.
Yeah.
They were a bit of a raucous crowd, having a good laugh a bit of Shakespearean comedy.
Yeah. And
well, there was tragedies and histories in there. Yeah. In fact, there was every single kind of Shakespeare, wasn't there?
There certainly was. I think if Shakespeare was told like that when I was at school, I probably would have listened a bit more.
Yeah true.
But no, well done to the team at MPA. And did you catch anything else in your busy week?
No. Gosh, I had to think about that, didn't I?
You did. This week I'm off to Shot in the Dark Productions with the Auckland University team, and I'm going to check out the APO on Friday.
Awesome. I don't think I'm doing anything this week, which for me is a little bit bizarre.
Yeah,
but
check your diary, I think.
So yeah, well, I mean, I've got costumes to get ready for the show, which Ormiston Juniors College's junior production of Shrek Junior, which starts next week. So I've got a week to get those costumes finished.
Oh, well, that'll keep you out of mischief.
Sure will.
Now, things that matter to questions that matter now. So I'm just going to ask you some tough questions. Just get you to pull your mic a little bit closer to you over there. Brilliant. So first of all, tough question round the room, hard and fast. Olympic Games, are you watching?
Not really.
Not really, but yeah.
Kind of. I watched the rugby last night, which was weird.
Okay, I was going to say then, your favourite Olympic sport, if you had one?
It'd have to be gymnastics.
Skateboarding?
Yeah, I think I'd go gymnastics as well.
Is skateboarding an Olympic sport now?
Apparently, yeah.
Oh.
I know BMX is skateboarding as well.
I think so, right?
Wow.
Unless someone put a prank on me.
Pretty cool.
He's watching it, so it must be.
I was watching skateboarding. I assumed it was Olympics.
If you could put the arts into the Olympics, what thing could you do that could be competitive? So think for a second, if you could create some sort of art form that was a competitive inter-country challenge, what would it be? Best ideas?
Would it be like improvising?
Yeah.
Like theatre sports?
Yeah. So decent good old theatre sports?
Yeah, it's got sports.
Yeah.
Right? It's a sport, yeah.
Sport, yeah. I don't know. What else could we have?
Well, if they did like a 48-hour film festival, but it was a drama one. So like
advising.
Yeah, so Dare to Devise is something that we do here in New Zealand. Northland Theatre Company do it, and so do Drama Massey Branch do a Dare to Devise where you get your theme on and what can be in the devise piece, and you've got 48 hours to devise and it's performed.
That would be very cool.
Speed painting.
Speed painting, that'd be nice. Yeah, portrait, self-portrait,
Some kind of a composition type thing. It wouldn't have to be drama. I mean, imagine if you had to write a jingle for the Olympics.
Yeah, or write the opening number before the opening ceremony or something.
Yeah.
Or the closing ceremony. You've got the whole Olympics to write the closing ceremony piece.
Or to devise that, like maybe you do it before, you know, you have a competition like The Voice in the middle of the Olympics where people have to get chosen for their arts thing.
Write a whole play.
Yeah, no, yeah. And then stage it.
Yeah, yeah.
In 17 different languages.
Yeah.
No problem. Okay, next question then. A dream role. If I could hand you the congratulations letter for a dream role in any stage show or musical or film, what is it? It may have already been done and there's no hope of getting it. That's okay. It's radio. But what's the dream role, Gabby?
Madame Thénardier.
Oh, name is. Woo!
Yeah. I love it.
Cool.
Yeah.
Do you enjoy a good musical?
I love a musical. Yep. Sound of Music.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
Favorite movie.
Okay, cool. Jonathan? Drum roll.
This is a tough question. I can't sing, but I would love to be Judas in Jesus Christ Superstar.
But you don't really have to sing for that one. I mean, you just have to make very loud rock sounds.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah.
I do. I'm good at yelling on stage.
So. I mean, Tim Minchin's done it. Alice Cooper's done it. I mean, you know, there's room for anyone. Yeah, cool. All right, so Judas, Sian?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I think, well, I guess what kind of inspired me and wanting to get into acting in the first place was, like, movies. So I'm a massive fan of Jurassic Park, so... Maybe a role in a Jurassic Park movie.
Okay. Which dinosaur... There's an important question. What dinosaur would you be?
If... Ah. Oh.
Oh, think about that. What dinosaur would you be?
What dinosaur? Oh, just have to go with the classic T-Rex. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What dinosaur would you
I love it that Emma's now looking at all guests in the studio. You have no choice. You will all
Triceratops
answer
this is song. My favourite dinosaur, but...
What were you going to say?
Triceratops is my favourite dinosaur, but they don't do a lot in Jurassic Park. Like, there's one and it's sick, and it doesn't really do anything but breathe. So I guess I'd have to choose T-Rex as well.
Yeah. I'm going to go Triceratops.
All right.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Okay, next question. Sian, I'm starting with you. You're on the spot before the orchestra plays. You're standing receiving your Tony Award or your Academy Award.
Mm-hmm. Or BAFTA.
Yeah, whatever it is for your best performance ever. Yeah. Who do you thank? You've got 30 seconds till the music plays.
Who do I thank?
What's your thank you speech?
Oh, it'd have to be my parents, you know, for sure, number one. I guess everyone that's gotten me to where I am today, you know, typical kind of corny thing. Thank God. Just friends and family who have supported me through the hard times.
Music started.
Yeah.
Nice.
And that's me. Thank you very much.
And I think we've asked you that before in the past. Have we asked you last time you were here that question?
I don't remember.
Oh, don't remember. Okay, so who would you thank?
Probably my wife, first of all. Is the one who got me into it. And then, yeah, family and friends. Anyone who didn't try and hold me back, I guess.
Nice.
No one really did, but, you know.
Nice, cool, short and sweet in before the music. Gabby?
I'd like to thank my parents for always coming to see plays, you know.
No matter what.
Like the school productions that I direct, even though they might not be into it. And Johnny for, yeah.
Thanks.
I suppose he's been helpful.
Suppose.
That right. Unconditional support of a parent. Yeah. Yeah. Who inspires you? Who do you get your inspiration from these days? Famous person, other person closest to you, colleagues. Who's inspiring you in your work on a day-to-day basis?
I think I've always been inspired by, I guess, like the story of my grandparents and how they moved here a long time ago. I just think they endured a lot to get to this country and be here, and I guess if it wasn't for them, then I guess I wouldn't be able to have the privilege I have today. So, yeah, I find their story pretty inspiring.
Nice. Where had they travelled from?
From India.
Yeah.
Both my grandparents came when they were relatively young, would have probably come over on a boat. And, yeah, struggled a lot to kind of make a life here. But, you know, if it wasn't for them, I wouldn't have been born here, been able to go to school and university and all that sort of thing. So they paved the way.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool.
Mm.
Gabby, who inspires you?
I think people that just, you know, get it, go and do the thing. Like, they don't let anything hold them back. I've got... there's some of my students as well. Sorry, this is not very like.
That's right. This is a quick fire round. Don't panic.
Yeah, I've got some students as well, which I just. Yeah, it's amazing. Like just seeing how kids are sometimes, and the fact that they just keep going, and they might be going through lots of other stuff, but they just keep going. Like, I think that's always really inspiring. And they don't try to change who they are, you know. They're proud of who they are, which is awesome, yeah.
That's cool. That's why we do what we do.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Jonathan?
Gabby inspires me. but in terms of theatre, I since getting involved, I've met so many people in the theatre who just... And it's, you know, it's amateur community theatre, and they give it their everything, and they spend countless nights putting together the props and the costumes and making everything from scratch and organising everything themselves. It's, I mean, it really is community in the biggest sense of the word, and community is made up of those people who give so much of themselves to it. So it's just been meeting those people and who inspire me. Yeah, to keep going.
Nice. Sian, a favourite Kick Arts question, which we'll close for this round on. Right. If you could go back and talk to your 16-year-old self, what would you say to them?
I would say go with your passion. Just pursue what you're passionate about, what's in your gut. Don't worry about the rest of your life. It'll take care of itself. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think your 16-year-old self was ready for that?
I don't think I would have listened.
Yeah.
I would have been like, but no, like, what about money and family? You know, what about all those things that, you can worry too much about the future? And I think, you know, it's important to think about that stuff. But I think when it consumes you, and again, like children these days, I mean, there's so many avenues we... It's amazing, like, people who do go all in on what they love, like, what they can create, and it can become a career, or it can be life-fulfilling. So, yeah, just go with... Just do what you want to do. I mean, within reason. Don't like, hurt other people. but go with what you want to do and what's really in your heart. Follow that.
Nice. Brilliant. Well, someone who keeps doing what she wants to do is the wonderful Lisa Crawley, a good friend of our show. And I can't believe it, Emma, she's put out another song and track and music video. She's done so many this year in LA, doing fabulous work. So here is her latest one called Looking for Love.
Goes down, you're out for the evening. Time is up, regretfully leaving. Hope so high, keep chasing that feeling. It's never enough. Fairy tale was less than enchanted, full of charm, but still there's no magic. On your own, it's not how you planned it, but you're not giving up. You're looking for love. You keep looking for love. Looking for love. Looking for love. E-O-E-A. Take some time, get your shit together. You seem fine, but you know you could be better. Back again, just like a broken record, but you're not giving up. Perfect match, this time you know it. It don't take long, the cracks start showing. Deja vu, you know where this is going. It's never enough. You're looking. You keep looking for love. Looking for love. One of a kind of looking for love. Have you been searching for some other person who's all alone? Go find another instead.
Deja vu, you know where this is going. You're looking for love. Where do you find it? You keep looking for love.
Looking for love. I'm not sure what I added on there to the end of that track.
It sounded like a jingle for a dating app or something, or like we were going to go into some Cooking with Stephen or matchmaking. Oh no, it was couples therapy.
Oh,
with Stephen.
Couples
that
therapy.
Was the couples
that was
therapy
it.
Money. That
so check out Lisa Crawley online with her latest offering, and yeah, keep up the good work over in LA. Now, to sort of last 10 minutes of the show, I want to talk a little bit more about you and your current projects. And off air just then, our guests started chatting about rehearsal schedules and things. And I thought, well, actually, it's quite an interesting conversation, because to compare, so the amateur setting, but you're juggling full-time day jobs and then going out to rehearse as opposed to professional theatre. So let's start with The Crucible. Talk us through, when did you start rehearsing, how often, and what's that build-up like?
Our rehearsal schedule is Tuesdays and Wednesday nights and then Sunday afternoon, so we had one this afternoon. I'm not sure
I think
when
we started maybe in the middle of May or around the 10th of May. And we've got, three.
So nearly 3 to 4 months worth.
And three rehearsals a week, and I suppose it depends on who's available and juggling all of that. And
getting up to dress rehearsals and performances, you're still doing your full-time job, you're not taking leave?
No.
Juggling both?
So it is a juggling. It starts to get tired around this time. But that's good.
It's a good kind of tie.
And kind of good, I guess, that you're both in it together. At least you understand each other's tiredness. You're not coming home to somebody who's like, come on, where have you been? You both know. That's cool.
It's been awesome.
Sian, tell us your journey. When did auditions start versus rehearsals, etc.?
The auditions were in June, and then we started rehearsing. We're going into our fourth week now. Just kind of early July or beginning of July. And, it is a full-time rehearsal schedule. So Monday to Friday, full days, and then we do a half day on Saturday as well.
Wow. It's about 6 weeks by the sounds of it.
Until we get onto stage and start kind of mapping it out there. So,
and even when you get into the theatre, is that space during sort of business hours?
So I mean, you know, if you do, and there are people that work full-time jobs doing that, and they just have to take that time off. Like I work a few part-time jobs, so I can kind of work around it, but I mean, I've also done shows where you are rehearsing like evenings during the week and then your weekends, and I guess it's just different companies do it differently depending on funding, I'm guessing.
And you're on at the ASB Waterfront Theatre.
Yes.
Beautiful theatre space.
Yeah.
Interesting, though, because when you talked about the show, I kind of pictured it more in an intimate setting, and ASB is quite a large theatre space. So are we sort of looking into a busy hospital type set versus home life? Is that what I'm gathering from it?
Without
giving it all away?
I mean, there's some pretty well-coordinated transitions in there, which kind of take you to the different settings. But, you know, you will get to see those environments from the home environment to the hospital sort of settings. And, yeah, I mean, it's amazing what you can do on stage in terms of trying to create that intimacy with lighting and space and all that sort of thing. So, yeah, I mean, it's interesting hearing you say that. And, you know, I guess we'll see when it comes to stage. Because even I can see the rough layout, but I know how it's going to look roughly, but until you're actually there and seen it put together, it's another story. So,
still the magic as it all comes together.
Yeah, the magic of theatre.
Can I ask two questions of you? What have you learnt about the New Zealand health system that surprised you the most? And what have you learnt as an actor during this process?
Right. About the health system, I guess, I mean, kind of like I said earlier, it's easy to blame our healthcare system, but I think I have really learned how overwhelmed the staff are and the system and the pressure we place on there when we could be doing so much more outside of that. Yeah, I mean, I don't imagine any healthcare system is perfect, but they're doing their best. They're doing their best, and yeah, I guess it's just something as society we can be more aware of, that it's trying to make the best of what limited resources are available. Yeah,
and as an actor, best takeaway
has been. It's interesting because, you know, we've got quite a varied cast in terms of, like, experience and all that. And I think one thing I've learned is no matter what level you're at as an actor or how old you are, we just get to play. Mm-hmm. And that's nice. That's, like, a real privilege, but it's also, I mean, it's hard work. It's not, I don't think acting's easy, but it's also, like, we get to... We're in a position where we get to play and try things and tell important messages. And I think, yeah, sorry, going back to your question, I think, you know, you can say to yourself, oh, I've got to, you know, behave in a certain way and, you know, and all that's important, but you can still just have fun, you know, just find the joy in it. So
nice. Yeah. I don't think I asked at the beginning. Apologies. Who's directing?
Annapella Politavi.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Cool. Yeah. Awesome. All right, team. Jonathan, Gabby, best takeaway of what you've learned so far during this experience? It's something new that you've learned about yourself or yourselves as actors, performers?
I think for me, this is my biggest role that I've ever got to play since, you know, sixth form drama. So I think... To start off with, I was very unsure whether I was capable enough. I think it's also the first kind of serious role that I've had. I tend to kind of go towards the comedic stuff. So for me, it's been really nice to kind of have that challenge and to really prove to myself that I am capable. Yeah, so I think that's really nice. And I think also just finding that character and... finding the similarities between her and I, even though we are very different, there are similarities as well, which is really nice. You know, she's caring. She might not be outwardly loving, but she's a kind and righteous person. So, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Jonathan, your takeaway?
This is also the biggest role I've had. And it was, it's intimidating. I think the biggest takeaway would be how important it is to understand the character that you're playing. It took me a really long time to get into the headspace of John Proctor because he's so different to me. I hope he's different to me. Yeah, and so I guess that would be my takeaway, is the importance of the character in everything, and I'm trying to project that when I'm on the stage, I hope.
Nice. And your director, creative team?
James Bell is the director.
That's James. Yeah. Cool. Awesome. And do you have something next lined up on your horizon?
No, we will be taking a break from acting for a while.
Yeah.
Going into recovery.
Yes, going into recovery. Yes, having a baby in November.
Oh, so, congratulations.
Thought it's probably best to focus on that.
Yeah, well, that's enough drama in one household for a while.
So. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, and then I wonder, Emma, who will be left home with the baby and who will get back to rehearsals.
We've already
first.
Organised. We're going to take turns.
You know, okay.
That's
share
what
I was
going to say. It'll be turnabout.
Yeah. Now, that'll be tough, though, coming home and the other one's been out rehearsing. Yeah. When you've done so much together.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's so cool. That's cool. Give us your plug for the show and where people can find tickets, etc.
Crucible is running from the 11th to the 15th of August. You can find tickets at foolishwit.com or pumphouse.co.nz.
Brilliant. Foolishwit.com or pumphouse.co.nz. Awesome. We wish you all the best with the season. Hope it goes well. At least you're indoors this time. And good luck for the new arrival later in the year.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming and joining us again.
Thank you so much.
Awesome. And Sian, tell us, where can people head for tickets and information about Things That Matter?
Yep. So Things That Matter, you can get your tickets at atc.co.nz. It's on from the 17th to the 29th of August at ASB Waterfront Theatre.
Brilliant. Cool. And check out all of ATC's current shows up on their website with lots of things happening, as we heard, the Haka Party incident taking place throughout New Zealand. So that's cool. Does Auckland Theatre Company tour New Zealand much that you know of?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
No, I felt like that was quite new. I haven't seen that for a while.
The Haka...
What? The fact that they're touring out of Auckland.
Yeah, no. It's not...
They've been very much based here.
Mm. It just kind of speaks to the success of that show and you know, how important it is for... people to see it. So
yeah, that's really cool. It's cool to get it out in that space. Hey, thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule to come along.
Thank you.
Both Emma and I will check out the show on different nights. We're really looking forward to seeing it, so thanks
cool.
so much.
And sorry, just quickly, I just thought I'd correct myself. Anapella's last name is Palata Eval. Sorry, I said that wrong before. So
that's quite okay. We all said some things wrong. Bulletins too. No, absolutely fantastic. Good luck with your season. And remember, we have our competitions for both of them. So what do they need to do?
They are going to jump onto Facebook when they see those. And you need to just make sure that you are liked or followed us on either Facebook or Instagram and tag someone that you would take along to watch that show with you.
Absolutely. And they can find out about our listings and some of the work we do to promote their shows.
Yes, on our website at kickarts.org.nz, or email us and we can send you out a media kit at info@kickarts.org.nz.
Yeah, and come on our show. We've got an exciting week next week. We have the cast of Wicked in here. We've got some creatives, some dancers, some witches and more. So it's going to be a very full singing live studio next Sunday, Emma. I think, do we need to go green in here for them?
Maybe we do. Maybe we should wear green.
Yeah, maybe we need to think about that and prep the place for some mischief next Sunday.
Mm.
And you've got a nice calm week ahead.
Sure have, and it's going to be nice. Like I said, costumes. I actually learnt today how to make a prosthetic bald cap, believe it or not. So I've been having much fun with my friend Donna from Body FX, who's taught me how to do that. So that's really exciting.
What do you make it out of?
Latex.
Ah.
Yeah.
Brilliant. So now you've made that, you'll be busy making Adam's Family.
I still need to finish making it. Yeah, I could do the Adam's Family one. That's true.
Yeah. You were talking before about, you know, the calm of professional theatre. You see Emma this morning taking 100 teenagers through several part harmonies in the Addams Family. Yeah, it's pretty impressive. Hey, we're going to finish with our new outro by the wonderful Ant Tarrant. Congratulations on winning the $3,500 package from Arise. Thanks for listening. Have a absolutely fabulous week. And make sure you...
kick some arts.
To brush your teeth and don't forget to go to sleep. We'll be going live, same time under the stars, saying blah, 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 blah. Let's go kick some R, R, R. Go kick some R, R, R. Go kick some R, R, R. Good night from Kick Arts.
Thanks, Ant. You're absolutely amazing. We really appreciate it.
We love your arts.
Yeah.
Arts.
And to the team at Arise, we really appreciate your support. It means a lot to us. Thanks, Richard and team. Have a fabulous week. Make sure you...
kick some arts.